Hello, hello, and welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Jessica Stevens here, your host of I Just Blank Now What. Thank you so much for tuning in for another Now What Wednesday story. Truly, this is my favorite day of the week when I get to bring you an amazing story from an amazing human about a time in life when life came at them and they had to figure out how to move forward from there. And today's story is no different. We're going to be chatting with the lovely Natalie Guzman in just a minute. And her story is one that when I first sat down with Nat to have a quick chat, I was just shock and awe. Like my jaw just like hit the floor and I couldn't believe how her childhood literally got turned upside down when one day her mom decided to stop being a mom and she put Natalie in foster care. So normally in foster care situations, there's a reason why, you know, parents and children are separated. There could be a death. There could be, you know, a parent who is unfit. All of that is what we kind of know about foster care and why kids are put into the system. But I had never heard of a mother volunteering to put her child into the system. So this is why I really wanted Natalie to join us on the show today, is to unpack exactly what happened, what was going on, and how she survived that trauma. So without further ado, let's learn a little bit about Natalie. She became a virtual assistant in 2015 after her job told her she only had 2 days to give birth and then she would have to return to work. Immediately, she decided to start a virtual assistant business to make money from home and stay with her baby. She decided to turn her side hustle into an agency. And now Natalie owns multiple businesses, including a marketing agency, a business consulting firm, as well as an all-in-one software for businesses to build websites, emails, automation, and more while raising her beautiful family in Southwest Florida. So without further ado, let's get to the now what. Have you ever had a situation happen in your life that you weren't expecting, good or bad, and said to yourself or out loud, oh my gosh, I just fill in the blank, now what? Me too, friend, me too. I've had quite a few actually, and in the moment, I never knew what I was gonna do next. Of course, I had to figure it out, sometimes the hard way, but I did figure it out. So join me and some amazing guests this season as we all share our own I just blank now what stories so we can all learn from their transformational lessons to help us all answer that lifelong and often paralyzing question, now what? Hey friends, have you ever had that I just feel so bloated now what moment? Me too, and that's when I reach for my Greens Gut Glow Drink. Yep, I can sip my way to healthier looking skin, support my digestive system, and get an extra scoop of greens all in one bundle that helps me de-bloat. This nutritious trinity includes 3 of my favorite Arbonne nutrition products: Be Well Superfood Greens, Gut Health Digestion and Microbiome Support, and Skin Elixir Collagen Support. I drink this every day. The greens, just one scoop of this versatile vegan superfood powder, delivers a blend of 36 fruits and vegetables in each serving for a boost of greens, featuring fiber, phytonutrients, along with a natural deep green color courtesy of blue-green algae derived from spirulina, chlorella, wheatgrass, and barley grass. Just one scoop provides me with the benefits of eating a full color spectrum of fruits and vegetables. Minding my gut's microbiome is a must, and this delicate balance of bacteria helps support favorable gut flora. Designed to support the benefits of a healthy diet, this plant-powered natural health product mixes easily with water, so its blend of probiotics and enzymes can work synergistically with my body to help support gastrointestinal health. Its ingredients include inulin from chicory root and 3 billion CFUs of Bacillus coagulant probiotics, plus enzymes that act as a digestive aid. This natural health product helps support favorable gut flora while helping to digest proteins and contains ginger, which traditionally used in herbal medicine to help relieve digestive upset. For the glow, I'm sipping my way to healthier looking skin.
This acai or dragon fruit flavored vegan natural health product features antioxidant vitamin C to help in collagen formation to maximize healthy bones, cartilage, teeth, and gums, silicone and biotin to support healthy hair, skin, and nails, and a blend of sea buckthorn fruit extract, pine bark extract, and vitamin C for antioxidants. This vegan natural health product provides beneficial ingredients for my skin, hair, and nails. So head to jessicastephenstoronto.arbonne.com and use promo code ARBONNE10 to get 10% off your Greens Gut Glow bundle. That's jessicastephenstoronto.arbonne.com and promo code ARBONNE10 gets you 10% off. Or just click the link in the show notes and get your Greens Gut Glow bundle all in one click.
Hey, Natalie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jessica, thank you so much for having me.
Oh my goodness, it's so good to see you. Thank you so much for coming on the show and wanting to share your story. I know that this one literally changed the course of your life because this is definitely something that happened to you. Yeah. So we're talking about, I just got tossed into foster care, now what? And you're going to be taking us back to when your mom decided she didn't want to parent you anymore and handed you over to child services. Can you just like rewind the tape and tell us what was going on and how old you were and what the situation was? And we'll just start there.
Yeah. So I think it's important to kind of go just a little bit further so you can kind of understand, you know, my everyday life and then that how crazy it was to be tossed in foster care. Because so my parents actually divorced when I was a baby. My mom got remarried when I was 7 to an amazing guy. And we went from living in the projects to living in a very upscale neighborhood. You know, we definitely had money and we were in a 3-story house. I never had a house with a basement or an attic, and I had both all of a sudden. So it was kind of a culture shock in the beginning, but we were a loving family. You know, I did dance and went to school and I had friends. We were very involved in our church community. They ended up announcing that they were going to get divorced when I was 13, and it kind of came out of nowhere. My mom, I don't think to this day that she really knows why he asked for a divorce, which newsflash, they're actually back together. So it's a very crazy story, but this really centers around their divorce. And she didn't really know what was happening. She didn't fight it. She was always like very supportive of him. She probably could have sued him for a lot of money. She didn't. She just wanted everything she kind of came into the marriage with. And it broke her. It broke her emotionally. She loved this guy with all of her heart, and no one really understood what was going on. I definitely didn't understand it because we were a loving family one moment, and the next we were having to live somewhere else. And so that was a culture shock. And I think it was a lot on my mom, who also had a couple of different mental diagnoses as well. It never really affected my childhood until that moment, though. And so when she found out she was getting the divorce, and you know, we stopped going to church because all the church had so much, even though they were our friends and that was like our big community, there's also a lot of judgment when it comes to divorce. And I think my mom just lost her support system in that moment. We didn't really live near family. All of her friends were her husband's friends. And so she
her world just bottomed out.
Yeah, I think it just hit her. And it's something I didn't realize at that time. It's something I realized more as an adult. And so she told me, though, one day that we were going to the fair. And so I was so excited. I was like, good, this is what we need. We need to have fun. We need to have some happiness, spend some time together. Next thing I know, we're pulling up into a field. Another car pulls up beside us. And my mom goes to the trunk and says, you're going to foster care. Next thing I know, my suitcase is being put into a stranger's car and I'm being driven off. Yeah.
So that's how the transition happened. There was no warning. It was actually like a bait and switch. You thought you were going off to go do something fun with your mom, and lo and behold, you're being sent off to foster care.
Yeah.
What were you feeling? Like, do you remember what was going through your head as a kid?
Oh, I just was bawling in tears. I did not like change because, like I said before, I you know, my parents got divorced and then remarried. Also, my sister went to live with my dad, which is another story. But I had a lot of changes of people basically at every point in my life. An adult had abandoned me is what I felt like at that age. And this was the final adult in my life and that I never thought would abandon me. And so, like, just not even having a discussion, just being put into that car, it broke me.
Did you have any communication with your mom after that? Like, in that window? Obviously, we're not talking about now. I know you as an adult have a relationship with her now. But, like, when you were a kid at 13 and you're now in foster care, was there any communication with her?
So when I think she didn't want to talk to me unless there was another adult in the room. So I think she was terrified of my reaction, which I am an emotional person. I cry at a drop of a hat. I am not ashamed of it anymore. I care very deeply, so I react very deeply. And I think that terrified her. She didn't want to see that and figured if another adult was in the room, maybe I wouldn't be so open and honest with my emotions. So she did wait until there was my caseworker and her and my foster mom were all in the living room. Of course, I didn't react how I probably would have if it was just me and her, because I also had this brand new adult that I was living with that I had to depend on for things in this room. So I was terrified of leaving a bad impression on her. Mm-hmm. I've always been a people pleaser. And so I just wanted to make the best of the scenario I was in and help my foster mom, who was overwhelmed at the time as well. She was an older woman, probably in her 70s. At the time, and she had one other foster kid and who became like my little foster care sister. I loved her. And I was just, I knew that it was a pretty good home. So I wanted to make sure that I stayed there because that was the terrifying thought that I could be moved. So we did have a conversation. I don't remember too many details. I think I was so traumatized by the whole situation that I talked out a lot. But I do just remember not being, just feeling like I was trapped, that I couldn't release my real emotions in that time.
All right. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, your new foster mom, this new house, this new family that you were placed with. What was that experience like for you? Obviously, I know you just mentioned your number one goal was to not be moved and safety was your big priority. So your behavior obviously impacted a lot of that. But, you know, how was it? You said you had another foster care sister there. Was it a loving, positive experience for you?
Yeah. So one thing I forgot to mention was in between the foster care home and being dropped off is I did go to a group home. And so the group home, I was terrified of. All the doors are open. You had boys right across the hall from you. No one had doors on their rooms. And it was a very strict schedule and like very harsh reprimands for stepping out of place. I think I didn't go and get medicine. Like they have a medicine line and I didn't take medicine. And so I didn't get in line. And I guess you still have to get in line even though you take medicine if you don't take medicine. And I didn't know that and I got reprimanded. So I was not a child that really acted out. I was the kid with the nose in the book. I was a very quiet, obedient child. And I think that terrified me was getting in trouble because I didn't know what the true consequences would be if I stepped out of line. So I didn't, when I got put in my foster care home and I met this 7-year-old woman whose husband actually had passed away, she had 2 grown adult children and a bunch of grandkids. She was very involved in her community. And then I had actually my foster care sister, I actually knew her. Crazy small world that we live in. She actually lived down the street from me. So she was on my bus growing up. And I knew a little bit about her situation. And so that actually, I did not want to leave her. I was like, I know this person. I want to be attached to them. She was a lot younger than me, I think about 7 years. So I wanted to be there for her 100%. That was something that was really, really important for me.
So it was kind of a dual role of A, you protecting her, but also she was your comfort and your familiar yeah. kind of anchor, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So how long were you in the group home before you got placed in the foster family?
Good question. I don't remember exactly, but I don't think it was long. I would say about 1 to 2 weeks. It really was a pretty quick transition, and they try to do that. It's just while they're waiting for a home to open up, it's even common these days that a lot of times children will go into group homes before they go find their actual home.
So you were what, 13 at this time now, around there?
Yep, I was 13, just about to turn 14. That's like
such a, that is such a big time in a young girl's life under the best of circumstances, right? Like those early teenage years, hormones are raging, things are going on, you're like figuring it out. And then to have this, I guess, big change happen in your life layered on top, definitely impacted the rest of the course of your life for sure. So how long did you stay with that foster family?
I stayed with them until I was 17, when then I became emancipated. They were very, very supportive. They definitely taught me a lot of things, but I actually went back with my mom. So I'm kind of remembering this as I talk about it, because if you've ever experienced a trauma, you block out a lot. And so sometimes things will come back to me and I'll be like, I forgot to add this because of the trauma. And so my mom actually, they put me back in her care, because there's only so many years. It's different now. Also, this was like 20 years ago. So that's one thing to keep in mind, that the foster care system does look a little bit different now. So I was put back in her care, because you have to be back in your parents' care after so many years, even if they willingly hand you over to the system, or I'd be put up for adoption. So my mom did take me back, but then she disappeared. I didn't know where she went. I didn't know what was going on. I was living in this two-bedroom apartment, basically upkeeping it. Luckily, she did pay the bills, but I had no idea where she was. And so I was going to school, coming home, making my own meals, you know, going to the grocery store, all those things. I think sometimes I would show up and there'd be food in the fridge, but I didn't know where she was. And so I don't remember if I contacted her. I believe I had to, but I was able to, you know, get my own apartment, go through the emancipation process and all that, just so I could get that apartment within the place where we were already living. But because I was a minor, they wouldn't give me my own smaller apartment. And so, yeah, I had to go through that process to really start living on my own. And then that way, you know, I was like, if she's not going to be here, she doesn't want to take responsibility for me. I was terrified of cops showing up and being like, you have to go back in foster care system. There's no adult. That terrified me. So I just, when I just was like, what's legal? I remember trying to figure it out. Google search wasn't really a thing back then. And so I was asking like counselors and all their advice. I didn't tell them that my mom wasn't there, but I was like, what's the legal way to get an apartment by myself? And so that's kind of the route I went. And I had to just be really smart and be very careful with what I said and to who.
Natalie, I want to take my hat off to you, girl, because that is so much for a young woman to have to go through. And you really were forced to grow up and become an adult way before nature intended.
Yeah.
Right? And society. So what was that process like of getting emancipated? So was there a social worker who was still checking in on you, even though you were now living with your mom, because you were back in her care, but they must have been watching things because she's the one who handed you over to foster care, right? So what, you know, did you have a caseworker who helped you, right? Like, as you said, there was no real Google back then. So what was the support system you used to like figure out how to go about emancipating yourself? How did you even know what emancipation was?
Yeah, so I think it was actually a teacher that told me about emancipation. I think they kind of figured out what was going on, because I also took buses everywhere. So where I went to school was about 25 minutes from where I worked, and then another 25 minutes to home. So I was taking buses all that time, but that teacher also was. And so they saw me sometimes and was like, man, you're coming back from work? What? And I'm like, yep, yes, I am. And so I think they saw that I was really traveling by myself. I didn't really have a lot of adult support at that time, or else they probably would have picked me up from school or picked me up from work. And so I was sometimes not getting home till 9-10 o'clock on the last bus. And that teacher kind of realized it. And so they kind of mentioned emancipation to me. And then I did have a social worker and I had a therapist. That luckily they were probably, the therapist was probably my biggest cheerleader. I had a lot of therapists over the years, but I always remember her name was Sarah. And I don't think I'll ever forget her name, even though I've forgotten a lot of adults that have been, like, I forgot the social worker's name. But I don't think I'll ever forget her, because she was just like my biggest cheerleader and was always like, whoa, look at you go, and you got this, and you should look into this. She was sometimes like giving me recommendations. Like, I had to go to a bank to figure out how to do the checkbook and the checking account. I actually went to a teller and I was like, how do I work on this whole bank thing? How do I do this? How do I do direct deposit? How do I balance a checkbook? How do I set up online banking? Because that was just a brand new thing back then too. And so I really had to just ask a lot of questions, which is what got me really good at what I do today. But I did have some really great adults in my life to help guide me as well.
That's good to hear. I'm so glad that you had a therapist and you had a counselor and people there to support you. And I love the fact that you said you had to get really resourceful and ask a lot of questions, which translate to your success fast forward, 20 years into who you are today, because that, although, the trauma, and it was a very, very hard time of your life for sure. But at the time, you were just living life. Like, you didn't really necessarily compute like, oh, this is wrong, or this shouldn't be this way, or anything like that. You're like, this is my life. I need to figure it out. And so you learned a lot of skills that would later serve you in a really positive way later on. It sounds like you were always that kind of like, what's possible mindset versus, what was me kind of a girl. Do you kind of attribute your upbringing and what happened to you to be that person you are today?
I think I was put through a lot of changes at such a young age that just dealing with like the emotional and the trauma part of it, there really is no time to be woe is me. Like, you can grieve, you can be angry, you can be sad, but then you have to figure it out, because there's really, to me, it was so pointless to complain. It's not going to change anything. And I'm very factual. I'm very analytic. I love data analytics and things like that. And so I think that's a big part of my personality that I was very blessed with, because it's helped me, throughout all these trauma experiences. And so, just saying, if I complain or if I cry, if I'm, talking bad about my family, that's not going to help me. It's really just going to hold me back from, it's going to waste time that I could be spending on making my life better and putting it in the position that I want to be in.
Good attitude, girl. Good attitude. Okay. So you're 17, you get emancipated from your mother. Now what? What does Natalie's life look like as a 17-year-old, premature adult?
I worked. I did school. It was funny because in my senior year, I was the valedictorian, and everyone thought I was failing school. They thought that I was not getting good grades because I would skip out of school a lot, because I had already done basically all my senior work within the first month of school. I was so ahead because I used work to busy my mind. I always kept asking for more and more work because I just didn't want to think about my situation. And I didn't have activities after school anymore. I just had work and school. And so I had a lot of free time. Weekends, I would just spend doing schoolwork. And it kept me busy. I didn't have a TV or anything like that. So I absolutely loved doing schoolwork. And it just got me really far ahead. And so I would leave work early. Sometimes I would go splurge and I would go watch a movie. And then my work was in the same mall. And so I'd go to work as a hostess, Buffalo Wild Wings, B-dubs. That was my very first job. And I loved it. I think it was like the coolest thing that I could go to the movies and go to work, and I'd miss half day of school. And then the faces of all my classmates, when they put me up there saying my grade point average, they're like, what? Even my best friend, she was like, Natalie, you skipped so much school. How did you do that? And I was like, I got let go early.
Focus, girl, focus. You know, yeah. It was working smarter, not harder, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so you graduate from high school as the valedictorian. Yeah. Amazing achievement, my friend. Yeah. What was next for you? Were you, you know, was college or university something that you even wanted to do? What did you do next?
Yeah, so that was really hard. So I was actually doing dual enrollment. So I was doing college classes while in high school, starting my freshman year. I continued that using the bus system for my support. And it started getting really, really hard. My college was a good hour drive from my house. So if you imagine the bus system, that's about 2 hours. So I couldn't go to work and go to school and have my own apartment and be sane all at the same time. So I did take about a semester after high school, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And it actually came at the perfect time because my dad got my biological father, who I had seen, you know, a couple times a year. Maybe he would come pick me up from the foster parents' house, but he was diagnosed with bipolar when I was 10. So he was in and out of mental facilities a lot. But amazing, amazing guy, really tried his best as a dad with what he had. And so I think the biggest lesson was that I learned that my parents are human and that they have their own issues and their own things. And so I just had a lot of love for him, even though he didn't raise me. And he, you know, sometimes forgot birthdays and things like that. But I think because I learned that our parents are humans, that I was able to forgive him really easily. But he got thyroid cancer and was living in Florida. And so I ended up moving with him shortly before my 21st birthday. And that's where, we were in Massachusetts and I went to Florida. And that is where I feel like my life really began. That's where I was starting to have friends and I fell in love and I met my husband and had some amazing years with my father before he passed away.
Oh, I love that for you. I love that you were able to create a new level of relationship with your dad, one where you could support him in his final years and without any of that resentment or judgment of, you know, where were you when I was, right? That's a huge, huge thing. Okay, so your dad is what took you south to Florida and you've been there ever since. So I know you mentioned at the beginning of the episode that your mom and your stepdad reconciled and are now back together. And I believe you do have a bit of a relationship with your mom now. So can you just kind of jump cut us a little bit forward and say, like, now what? Like, now what's your relationship like with your mom, who was the person who gave you up?
Yeah, so actually after I got my apartment, I did get back in contact with her. I think she started to heal herself. And so we first texted a lot and then we called and then we had visits and she actually helped me kind of get settled into that apartment too a little bit. When we moved from the 2-bed to the 1-bed, it was a little bit of a process. And so I just kind of started seeing her and eventually she moved back into the same complex I was in. So I'd walk to her house and check on her and things like that. I think it was really hard for her when I moved to Florida because we were just getting our relationship back. But I knew Florida was where I had to be because my siblings had families. And so it was really important for me that I did not have my own family, to have kids or a partner, that I would just go to Florida and also kind of give me that space. My mom can be a little bit hard. I love her to death. But you have to set boundaries and you have to have a tough mind sometimes. She doesn't. It's one of those people that she doesn't realize she's insulting, but sometimes it can come off insulting. That's not really her intent, but that's just what happens. And so I think that was the best move for me, was to go to Florida, have those boundaries and still see her a couple times a year, but not be within walking distance. And so
her in your everyday life. Yeah,
exactly. And so she would come visit a lot to Florida, actually, to see me and my family. Shortly after I gave birth to two of my children, she came and saw me. And eventually she called me and said, I want to move to Florida. And at first I was a little hesitant, but I was like, I'm married now. I have kids. You know, I've grown a lot. I'm a lot stronger than I was, you know, at 20. And so I can definitely handle, you know, anything that the relationship throws at me is what I felt like. I was very secure. I had a really great relationship with my in-laws as well. That kind of showed me how to be a mom, and so, so grateful for them. And so I said, okay, you can come live in our house. We got, my husband's job provided us housing. And so we also owned a house. So I let her stay in our house while we lived at my husband's job. And she eventually got back in touch with my stepfather. They still saw each other and went on vacations every year, strangely enough, after being divorced. I think my mom just loved him so much she couldn't let go. And so they ended up, when she moved to Florida, just seeing each other more and more, fell back in love. And they're together today. But unfortunately, my stepfather does have Alzheimer's. And so we are navigating a whole new life story as his memory is going.
Natalie, like, they could write a movie about your life.
Yeah, they could.
Because it is filled with so many layers and different chapters and different directions. And you have navigated this life of yours with such grace and poise and positivity. I just, my hat off to you, girl. And I'm so happy that you found somebody and fell in love and have, you know, your own little big growing family. Sounds like you have lots of, how many kids do you have?
I have two children, but they're 12 months apart. Too. So it was a lot.
So it's kind of like twins. Oh my goodness. So yeah, you literally have totally put your life onto a whole new path. You've healed all of those relationships from your past, which is also so beautiful. I think that has a lot to do with how great your relationships are with your husband and your in-laws and your mom, is because you did the work to like heal yourself so that you could be in relationship with them now. All right. So here's a question that I always love to ask is, you know, the probability of somebody going through something similar to you, probably very rare, right? Like most people are not in a situation where their parents, you know, hand them over to foster care and navigating an emancipation. Like you are like a one percenter, like 1% of people kind of go through what you go through. But for people who are going through things in their life who would likely have similar feelings of abandonment, neglect, resentment, all of those emotions that you were feeling while you were going through what you're going through, what would you share with them as your kind of framework of moving forward with their lives and not having all of that take over and control what they do and how they feel and the relationships they have?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is, you know, almost on all levels, we pretty much have some sort of, you know, relationship issue with someone in our family, whether that's a parent of sibling, you know, an aunt, an uncle, something, right? Probably traumatic or different decisions not lining up, big emotions, big personalities, things like that. And so I think the biggest thing that was like a game changer, especially with my relationship with my mother, was boundaries. And I don't think I really understood boundaries until I was like 27. So less than 5 years ago. And so I was one day, I think my mom wanted to go on a trip with me or something. And I had little babies. I was overwhelmed. I was just like I can't. And some of the things that she was saying to me were hurtful. And so but she wasn't trying to be mean. But it was like things like, oh, the outfit doesn't look good on you. I was always a bigger woman too. I was actually recently lost a whole 80 pounds. So I am looking a whole different lately, but I was usually about over 250. And so my weight was a really big thing with my mother, who's always petite, as she calls herself. And so setting those boundaries and being like, hey, can we not talk about how I look? Or, you know, if we are planning, you know, a vacation or something, can we do it at a different time? That's not good. It doesn't make me the bad guy. And I shouldn't be afraid of her reaction, because her reaction is ultimately on her. It's not on me. And I think that was my big thing. It was like, what's the worst that can happen? That's something I say to myself in every situation now, especially as I'm trying to be a former people pleaser. And so my thing is like saying no or boundaries. What's the worst that's going to happen? If and what's the best thing that could happen? And I think weighing those two outcomes is really what helps me create these healthy relationships in my life.
Yes, such good advice. So what you were just saying triggered a thought that for me and a book. Are you familiar with Brené Brown?
I don't think so, no.
She's an author. She has a whole bunch of great books out there. But Brené wrote a book called Rising Strong. And the other day I was listening to an audio recording of her doing this talk, talking about the book and, you know, Rising Strong as a spiritual practice. And it was on this whole theme of people pleasing, right? But also this concept of believing that people are doing their best. Mm-hmm. And do you walk through life believing that people are doing their best or not? And she was somebody who did not think that people were doing their best all the time, but obviously knew, you know, the benefits that could happen. So she started doing lots of research, looking into research, and she found that the people who truly believed that others were doing their best were also people who had set really good boundaries, right? Because mm-hmm. it is a lot easier to have compassion for someone and understand what's, you know, going on in their life and their in situation when you have set a boundary and that they're not kind of trampling into to your world and, you know, causing stress or taking advantage of you or whatnot. So it's so much easier to be able to truly believe and have empathy for other people and that they are doing their best when you do set boundaries. So your story kind of reminded me all of that, like you saying you understand that your parents are human and that you have compassion for them and they truly were doing the best that they could with what they were experiencing for themselves is exactly that. And then you talking about setting some boundaries for yourself so that you can have this healthy relationship with your mom now and know that she is doing her best, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that you need to be on the receiving end of some of her stuff. Oh my goodness, Natalie, this has been such a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for opening up and sharing your story. Is there anything else that you want the audience to know about you and your foster care journey and emancipation, you know, experience and who you are because of all of that?
Yeah, I think it's just really important to remember not to let anything stop you, including yourself. So we kind of talked about, you know, not wallowing and not having self-pity and things like that. And because those things would have stopped me from becoming where I am and maybe even having a healthy marriage or having really great relationships with my in-laws, I think just making sure that nothing's truly stopping you, because most time it's us that's stopping ourselves.
So true. So true. All right. So if people want to get in touch with you, where do you like to hang out on the interwebs? You know, I know you're a business owner. Share all the things with everybody. Where can they find you?
Sure. I'm all over social media. It's Natalie Guzman. So make sure you put the ITS in front of my name and you'll find me mostly on Instagram and TikTok. If you like really personal things, definitely TikTok. If you like more podcasting things and interviews, then Instagram is definitely a place to find me.
Excellent. Excellent. Oh my goodness, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that one. I certainly did. And make sure to stay tuned for next week's episode. But if this episode resonated with you, please give it a like, a share. Don't forget to subscribe. Or if you know someone who is going through a season of their life, well, probably not similar to Natalie's, but some of the same emotions that Natalie was experiencing, please, please, please share this episode with them. It may help them figure out their very own now what. All right, that is it for us this week, and we will be back next week for another episode. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it more than I can say. Did you love this episode of I Just Blank, Now What? If you did, be sure to subscribe on your fave podcast platform. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. I do love reading them. And if you know somebody who's experiencing this story or something similar, please share this episode with them. It just might help them figure out the answers to their own now what questions. Have you recently had a now what moment and aren't sure what to do? Reach out to me at jessicastevens.ca and submit your story, and I'll help you figure out what to do, how to move forward, and help you answer now what. See you on the next episode.